Welcome to Immigration Today. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and today we're breaking down policies, stories, and issues that matter. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome to Immigration Today, where we bring clarity, compassion, and real-world understanding to one of the most complex systems families and communities are facing today. I'm your host, Elizabeth Trifonis, and this show exists to help immigrants and their loved ones navigate the legal landscape with confidence instead of fear. I'm very excited today because joining us is Jose Pereira. Jose has spent decades advising leaders and families through high-stakes uncertainty. As a former CEO, resilience expert, and survivor of prolonged international captivity, his perspective on crisis, leadership, and human endurance brings uncommon depth to today's conversation. In the first segment, we're talking about why the immigration system feels so overwhelming, what people can focus on first when everything feels unclear. Jose, welcome to Immigration Today. I'm so privileged that you're joining us.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me here.
There's so many things I'd like to talk to you about, but today we're stepping into the reality that so many families face when the system feels impossible to navigate and the pressure really feels relentless, something you coach on that resilience piece often. The problem facing many in the audience is trying to navigate the immigration system without clear guidance. It feels like one wrong step could cause them everything. There's a lot of fear and urgency and misinformation. So what, from your experience, why does the immigration process feel so overwhelming for families and individuals when they're trying to do things the right way? And what's that resiliency advice? Or you've done this for a long time. Please enlighten us with your expertise.
Well, you know, this is a great conversation. But by the way, I was talking that with a friend a few minutes ago because, first of all, for your audience, I'm Venezuelan born, okay? So with all this situation that's happening in Venezuela, I cannot imagine that all the suffering of the Venezuelan has been going through. First, because when most of them came here because they were trying to escape of the situation, the crisis that was happening in our country. The people that are not familiar, I'm going to try to put this in perspective. I'm going to talk about our story, but it's very similar to other countries' stories, okay? So Venezuela, during more than 20 decades, has been in this communist regime that finalized it with a capture of Maduro recently. But this isn't at the end of the story, because this is the beginning of the end of the story, because the regime is still there. But the point is that the Venezuelan, one of the biggest diaspora of the modern world is the Venezuelan diaspora. More than 9 million Venezuelans has to escape the country because of the conditions, because or they were starving, or they were going to be killed because they were persecuted, political persecution, or because people were going to jail. So that the fear was really real. They came here, but these guys, these evil guys that were there, they decided to take people from the jail and send it here to the U.S. Bad people. So, you know, bad apples begin to get mixed with people that didn't have nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. And they came here, all this trend that agua, all this narrative of the trend that agua. And everybody that saw Venezuela saw like you were part of the trend that agua. I remember that I said, I don't get identified with these people. Because, first of all, I didn't come like a normal immigrant. I came here. When I came here to the U.S., I came like an international executive of an oil company.
Right.
And at the end, I became the CEO of that company. So my case is very particular. I never went through, unfortunately, all those issues that normal immigrants go. But trying to answer your question, that has to have a lot of resilience because it has gone through so much. Mm-hmm. I know stories of people that came here escaping of their situation, and now they're facing the problem with immigration, and then now they're scared they can get deported and returned back to their country where maybe they will face something worse than being. So it's really, really a complex situation.
Right. I was actually just in the detention center where our people go to. They get taken down to Aurora, Colorado, and was speaking with a Venezuelan who's been here for about 3 years and came in seeking asylum and was out here in our community and got stopped in a traffic stop. That's how we get detained these days here. But listening to his story just 3 years from Venezuela, Conditions are, no one leaves their home because they're comfortable. They
Because
leave
let
their
me
home
tell
because they're dying.
that the problem that happened is when Maduro began to send these bad people to here to the U.S. They unfortunately they came and they were mixed with good people escaping of the country with bad people. Those bad people were few people, but they were so noisy that the narrative that was created was like that all the Venezuelans are like that. And that's not true. That's not true. The people that doesn't know the story of Venezuela, I don't stress telling this story because, you know, I want to really put clarity of the situation. Before the communist regime came to Venezuela 25 years ago, Venezuela was the wealthiest country of Latin America, the wealthiest, with the biggest developed system of Venezuela. So we were not normal immigrants. We were not immigrants. The Venezuelans not used to immigrate.
Why would you leave a wealthy area with opportunity and economic growth?
I can tell you my case. Let me tell you my case.
Please.
I started working in Venezuela in 1985. And I came here to the U.S. in 2012, almost 30 years after, because I became here as an assignee. But I always came here for vacation. I never thought living in the U.S. I didn't need it because my country had everything. But of course, when all the situation began to unfold in Venezuela, it was time that you needed to go to other place because that was not a safe place. And that, unfortunately, the situation. There are a lot of Venezuelans. If you do a poll today in the Venezuelan population, by the way, the immigration of the Venezuelan in the U.S. is not the biggest one. Venezuelans are only 600,000 here. But in Colombia, there are like 2 million. In Peru, there are like 1 million. In Chile, there are like 1 million. In Spain, there are like 2 million. So here in the U.S. are around 600,000. I can guarantee you that more than 450,000 of these people are professionals. Are professionals. People very well educated. They are here seeking for asylum, and they are doing Ubers or working as janitors. So it's a shame. Really, right. It's a shame.
No, I think the whole state of Wyoming has only 450,000 people in it, to give some context to it. And in our community, we have a very large immigrant population, and we've been seeing many, many Venezuelans over the last 4 or 5 years in particular. And they're the most educated line cooks I've ever worked with and for, and it's a privilege to do that. But even into all the way up north here in Wyoming, right?
Elizabeth, let me tell you two cases that I know very well because I have family living today in those countries, Chile and Colombia. Look what the Chilean did. The Chilean, they took almost 1 million of Venezuelans. But in that population that immigrated to Chile, there was a lot of doctors. Nurses, doctors, and so look what the Chilean did. They put it in the health system, and the Chilean health system began to grow because of the Venezuelan doctors that were very well prepared. Let me tell you, the Venezuelan doctors are very good, very good, very, very, very good. So now Chile has one of the highest health security system because of the Venezuelan. What that Colombian did, they did a census of the profession of the Venezuelan, and they begin to assign to their duties. If you were a drilling engineer, you went to a drilling company. If you were a engineer in water, you went to a water company. So they begin to use the people of their expertise. I think if in the future, if there is, beside the current narrative of the migration, if there is change in the policies, how the immigration is looking in a more holistic way, you can find good people to that then can be very useful for the country.
Yeah, no, so, I agree with you, Jose. I feel like right now a lot of my folks, I have DACAs that have been here, you know, 30 years. We've invested education and medical care, and now we're getting to a place where they'll sign off on their deportation. From my perspective now, America is actually exporting our talent. or deporting now our talent and the wealth within our people because we've labeled them all immigrant, right? Just like Chile getting good doctors, Canada and Mexico and other places are going to get our good talent because we've changed our policy and are exporting the fabric of our community.
I hope that that changes. I hope at the end there is the situation get more where he has to go. Because I understand that the bad people, you have to take it out. Of course.
Right.
All these people of Sendelagua. By the way, I always said I don't identify myself by those people. That people, they could be Venezuelan, but I don't relate with these people. These guys don't represent me.
Well, I think that's a really great point, Jose, because actually on all sides of this conversation, nobody wants the dangerous people here.
Nobody.
That's actually fundamentally, we all agree.
Neither us, the Venezuelan, want those people because these are bad apples that doesn't represent us. And we don't want the bad apples be confused with the good apples.
Right, exactly. And the good apples came for security and safety, the same as the way I'd like to live here in my community.
And to work hard. Let me tell you, to work hard.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be right back. Up next, we separate immigration facts from myths like we're doing right now. And we'll uncover the truth behind some of the most common misconceptions that families face.
We'll be right back with more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life. Stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration journey with clarity and confidence, click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Welcome back to Immigration Today. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Immigration Today and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmediatv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. Welcome back to Immigration Today. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and we're continuing our conversation with Jose Pereira. In this segment, we're addressing one of the biggest drivers of fear of immigration, and we were talking about it in the earlier segment, these myths and misinformation that distort reality and keep families stuck in this anxiety. And Jose, we left off talking about some of the immigrant myths that you hear. What might be some advice on how to maybe get past the myths and get to the real information and the real stories of what's happening for Venezuelans or other people that you're working with?
Well, that I think one of the things is trying to educate and speak about it. Because, for example, I have had the privilege in these recent days, because of the situation that is going in Venezuela, I have been getting some interviews in some places. And I always try to explain what is the situation of Venezuela. Because when you understand better, because there is a lot of misunderstanding of what's going in there, and they don't understand why the people are here. So the people that are here is because there is a credible fear to not to go back to them. So mostly that you say, how much people are looking for asylum? Because all the people are in danger. Because this regime, the way it's conceived is to go against the people. Everybody, this opposition that thinks different is a target. They had that in Venezuela. This guy created a law. He called the Simon Bolivar law. And it's supposedly that anybody that they can identify that is against the government can be putting a text message or loading a photo that they don't like it. Because they take your phone, and if they review your phone and they find something that is against the government, you can stay 30 years in jail.
Right.
So it's ridiculous. So and that is going to jail. Is that that you go to jail? Maybe you're going to die in jail. So there's a credible fear of staying in the country. So that's the reason more than 9 million people flew the country. So can you imagine, Venezuela has 32 million people. 9 million have flown the country, almost a third.
Right.
Of the country has gone, and those third are typically young people. Why young people? Because the old people are old. So the young people go out of the country to have a work and have a job and can send money to their siblings and their parents. It's a real situation. And when you see the people that are getting detained and then they go to a place and be deported, I cannot imagine how this is becoming a tragedy for them and for their family. Because now they're in the fear not only to be deported, is that because if they get deported, maybe they can get killed when they return to the country. Because once those planes arrive to the country, they are being targeted like enemies. They are targeted like enemies.
Yeah, I just was speaking with a new asylum client, actually, at a detention center in Colorado from Venezuela. And it's not just that he's in detention now, and it's not a healthy place to be detained, very lacking in medical care, which he needs, but a real fear of, he left for reasons. He didn't leave because he was comfortable and because, you know, he was pushed out of his home and he felt the need to survive. I'm curious, with all of your expertise, if you've yet shown up in immigration court as an expert. Can I start listing you as my Venezuelan expert? I feel very privileged to be able to meet you in this space just after having visited with him at the center. Having been in captivity for 5 years, I'm very curious if you have any advice for people, either the person who is detained, maybe how to get through that, or maybe how family might support their loved one through that.
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, in my church, I go to a Hispanic church here in Houston. And when this issue with ICE began, unfortunately, many of the community begin to get, you know, go into the detention center. Some have been deported. Some has had the blessing that they have gotten back because our pastor has been actively working and get people released. And I remember one of the pastor assistants, he got detained. And when he got detained, I was like, wow, he's a pastor. And he had some issue in his past that appeared, and that was the reason he was detained. He finally got out. He stayed like 6 months. And I remember that I was, every time I was going to my church, I saw his wife. And I was always giving her, you know, words to, you know, to keep the faith and keep the hope. And when he came back, I remember it was a couple of weeks ago. When I saw him, I came to see him, and he said, "Jose, I have been all these times thinking in you, because you stayed 5 years. I stayed less than 6 months, and you stayed 5 years, my friend. I don't know how you made it." And, but, you know, my advice to the people is that even if you're going to a situation like this, you know, there's a God there. There's a God there and the love of your family. And I know it's tough. It's tough being in a place like that. But for the people that you have in your community that they are going to any situation or are having fear, think that there is always a God that is will take care of you besides whatever is going. And I truly believe that this is something that when you are believing that there is a superior power that can, you know, that can be part of your hope and your faith, that the thing can be a little different. I know it's hard, but it can be different.
Right, and I think that hope and faith is key.
It was happened to me. Without faith and hope, I will never survive those 5 years. And of course, the love of my family.
I think I always refer to it with my clients as keeping your eyes on the horizon. You know, that saying about keeping your chin up and trying to look forward to with that hope and that faith.
Look at another case that I know. This is a guy that is not a immigration case. It's a case that did something wrong and he went to prison. And he's also part of my community in my church. So I remember that one day that guy came to me and said, Jose, I need to talk with you. And he's very, very, very involved in my church, doing church service. And when that guy came to talk with me, he said, Jose, I want to talk with you because I want your advice. I said, what's going to, he said, and he said, I'm going to go to jail. I was convicted. What you did? So he told me the thing he was going through, and he was waiting to be called to go to jail. I told him, well, my friend, you are a man of God. God has changed your life. Now you're very well equipped to go, and maybe you're going to make a change there. Mm-hmm. And he's going to stay 3 years, 3 years in jail. And I remember the other day I saw his wife and told her how Chris is doing. And she told me he's doing great. He's with hope. His morale is high. And we are having the opportunity to write emails between us. They gave him the opportunity to write emails. Mm-hmm. So I told her, you have to write those emails intentionally, because that's going to become his book.
Right.
So write that email thinking that it's going to be his book, and tell him that when he goes out, he's going to have a testimony, right, and he's going to write his book. And now every time I see her, how he's doing, he's thinking in the book. So right. Because that's what, let me tell you, that's what happened to me. My book is based on the letters that I could write with my wife in my intention. Right. So I was not thinking in a book. I was thinking in having exchanging letter with her. And when I came back, I could take those letters and convert it in my book. So I had the opportunity to tell this guy, do it intentionally. That's going to become your book, and that's going to be your testimony.
Right. But, I mean, you had the CEO life and all sorts of things and goodness in your life, I'm presuming, and then you were detained. But that detention is the basis of the hero story, right? And how you got out of the belly of the whale, so to speak, as Jonah, and lived to tell about it.
Well, but in our case, it was really very difficult because we were not, the people don't understand, and I always try to picture the people, because we were not with normal prisoners. We were with political prisoners. This is a different animal, because my comrades in the prison were high-stake people. They were against the regime. So people, no, they were not normal prisoners. I was with the militaries, with a congressman, a religious leader, people that they're very well known, but they were against the regime. They were thrown in the jail as political prisoners. But we were all going through a simple situation. All were going through the same ordeal, trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can make the connection. And for me, I always say that I'm not glad what I went through, but I'm really glad the lessons I learned through what I went through.
Right. Wow. If this conversation is resonating, we encourage viewers to seek credible information and trusted guidance instead of relying on rumors and fear-driven advice.
Yes. Good advice. Yeah.
Coming up next, we'll talk about the human cost of delays and uncertainty, what it really means to live in immigration limbo.
We'll be right back With more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life, stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration journey with clarity and confidence, click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Welcome back to Immigration Today. As we continue this conversation, we're shifting from maybe some policy discussions and myth discussions and perception to lived experiences, the emotional and psychological toll of what long-term uncertainty can entail. The problem facing many in the audience is living in prolonged immigration uncertainty, and it often feels like life is permanently on hold with delays affecting not just paperwork, but your mental health, your family stability, and long-term planning. And Jose, I'm wondering, we were just left off talking about your 5 years in custody as a political prisoner that must have truly been uncertain and a delay that went on and on and on. What do you think is important people should know about these delays and this uncertainty, or any advice you might want to pass along to them to get some clarification?
Well, that's a good question, because I always mention that when you're in a situation like that, that I can imagine a person that going through that, trying to, you know, go out and return back to his life, his family. And one of the things that people have to think is there are things that they maybe will not, cannot control it. And there are things that they can control, for example, try to take care of themselves. So that was a situation that happened to us. When I was in my first year, of captivity, we were guys that were, you know, executive, always thinking. And I was trying to give guidance to my family what they had to do to take me out. I was trying to, from the jail, give instruction to my family what they had to do. And my family was like, oh, this guy's crazy. So at some point, I understood that I didn't have no way to influence that. So I leave that to my family, and we decided to take care of ourselves. So we began to take care of our mental and our physical health. And this is something that I can mirror that with somebody that's going through the situation, because sometimes those detentions can stay for months. So the people, when they, if they don't take care of themselves, let's say that they have the fortune that they are released, they can come back. If they haven't take care of themselves when they come back, they're going to become a burden for their family, because maybe now they're having health issues or mental issues. Because believe me, one of the biggest challenge is your mental issue. The physical issue is really serious, but the mental issue is even worse. I remember that when I was there in my detention, I saw people that were literally going mad. And I was always thinking, what will happen with this family when this guy is released? It's going to become a real burden for those families. Because some people were like zombies. They didn't sleep. They were all night awake. I tried to maintain a daily routine. I tried to keep a daily routine, my sleep. I was always taking care of the sleeping. I tried to do exercise. I was trying to do things to keep my mind busy and praying. One of the things that the people is important that pray, go back to God. If you have not doing it, maybe it's time that you go back to God and try to seek why you're going through this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the routine is keeping yourself on a routine when time...
A routine, right. Will make the things different for you. The time will pass more fast. In our case, when we discovered that we needed to do that, to keep the thing that we didn't have control in the hands of our family, that they begin to negotiate, pressure the congressmen and the people, and the journalists, and the press, etc., to do noise. So that was their job, to take us out. And we decided to take our mental and physical health, and we begin to do it in a daily basis as a routine, and we stayed with it for years. Mm-hmm. 4 years, not days, not months, years. And I came back.
Well, I think with the routine too, it's so important. When I'm in the detention centers, time is a really hard thing to judge. You don't just get to check your phone to see what time it is. You don't get to, you know, look at your Facebook, these types of things. So figuring out that this is when you eat breakfast, this is when you do your push-ups, this is when you pray or meditate, this is when you journal or work on your plan for what you're going to accomplish when you're released, and really try to envision that day and focus on that day.
Yes, yes.
Seems to be pretty key. Is there any advice that you can offer for communities, or maybe employers, or folks that are kind of helping those that are detained or dealing with this uncertainty? Any advice for those family members who you were trying to control while you were detained yourself?
Let me tell you a story that can exemplify that. I use it like a metaphor, okay? You know, we were in our 4th years of detention. And we didn't have no clue when we were gonna be released. We were thinking that we could stay there years, because the situation in our case was becoming really complicated, because we were caught in the geopolitical thing going in that moment between the US and Venezuela. So we were kind of political punks. And so we were like prepared for the long run. And one day they opened the door and they told us, get dressed up, that you're going to have a visit. And then they put us in a room. And when I saw it, came a very tall guy. He introduced himself, the Ambassador Roger Carter. So it's a guy that he was appointed to negotiate a release. Okay. So we had like a 2-hour meeting with him. He was telling what was going on. And when the guy was going out, I told him, Ambassador, we're gone. I don't know when, but we're gone. Now I'm more sure that we're gone. So the day after, they gave me a phone call and I could talk with my wife. And I told my wife, Mommy, bring me this Saturday. I had somebody that was in charge of my logistics in Venezuela. So I told, tell Egan, bring me a luggage, a carry-on. And she told me, why I carry on? I said, because I want to be prepared when I'm going to be released. And put me some clothes. I'm going to be ready to get released. And she was thinking that, and she told me I came that she saw that I was going crazy. You know?
Right.
No, I wanted to prepare myself. Look what I did. I took everything out of my prison cell and only kept that luggage with some clothes around. Every morning, I was talking to the luggage. Every morning, I told the luggage, be prepared that you're going to go with me. I began to do it every morning. I took 1 year doing it. And 1 year after, I came back. And the luggage came with me. So what is that metaphor here? And this is something for the people that can be hearing this. Never lose the faith and believe. You mentioned it. See yourself when you're released. See yourself out. See yourself freed. Maybe this is sometimes you don't know why you're going to a situation like this. For example, this guy that the pastor that was in jail, he was released, and he could, because he told me that I didn't know that. That he has something in his past that appeared like a criminal record, and he had the opportunity to clean that. He could clean that criminal record after that. So he got released, and when he came back, he came back with his paper already in order. So for him, he stayed like 6 months, but at the end, he could come back to his family. That was a story that, oh, God bless that it happened.
Right. You know? Well, I think that goes back to when you were mentioning controlling the things you can control. and letting go of the things you can't. You know,
Yeah,
you're
of
not
course.
going to be in control of your movement, your daily routine, or obviously your freedom. But things you can control are your mental health, taking care of your body, using the time to plan what happens when you're released. And
Correct, correct, correct. Prepare. And maybe, let me tell you, during those years, I had a lot of time to think, to visit my life, what I wanted to do when I came back. And when I came back, I started my coaching, I began to speak, and I wrote my book. So I already had things in my life that I wanted to do. So I already had things in my head, what I wanted to do, and I began to execute it.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes that forced time, I've worked with a lot of folks too, outside the immigration context, right? We've got to deal with some sobriety issues or other character rehabilitation needs that we might have. And if you can take the traumatic situation you find yourself in being detained and really try to find the hope and the silver lining on how you're going to come out better, and really keeping your eye on that.
God does things in mysterious ways. Sometimes you have to go to a process like that to revisit your life. And sometimes when you go back, say, oh, that's the reason I went through this situation. You never know. You never know.
Besides being an expert on Venezuela, called an immigration court later on, what's new for you on the horizon?
Well, I started a nonprofit. I started a nonprofit called Angels Helping in Earth to help Hispanic immigrants for trauma recovery. Because for me, it was a big issue when I came back. I had a blessing that the foundation that today I'm connected, one of them, Hosted US, they appointed me a therapist that she's still with me, and she became partner in my foundation. She helped me with my trauma recoveries. Another good friend that is from the Wake Medical Center, that is a big trauma recovery center in Raleigh, North Carolina. He became not only my friend, he became the prologist of my book. And both have been, by the way, guests in my podcast. I decided to use my experience going through trauma recovery, how to help others, and basically Hispanic people. Because there is something, and I'm going to start where I began. You come to this country because you want to escape of the situation of your country. Maybe you have been chased, or tried to be kidnapped, or tried to be killed, or are starving, or we have been victim of human trafficking, whatever. You come into this country with trauma. And now you're here in the country with fear because of ICE. So now you have trauma over trauma. Okay. And nobody's taking care of you. That trauma, you're gonna transfer to your kids and to your grandkids. Mm-hmm. You're gonna create generational trauma. So one of the pillars of the foundation, Angels Helping in Earth, is to help those trauma survivors, how they can rebuild their life, how they can do this and start up their new life. For example, part of the thing they want to do, I have a lawyer on a pro bono basis, helping not only for the immigration paper, but if they want to create a startup, you know, build a small business.
Absolutely.
And banana store, whatever.
I love that. Well, that's a great place for us to stop right now, because up next, we're going to focus on empowerment. And I think that's the perfect segue on how knowledge, trust, community help, and how we can help communities move forward with confidence. And we'll come back to talk about your not-for-profit. Thank you, Jose.
We'll be right back with more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life. Stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration immigration journey with clarity and confidence. Click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Welcome back to Immigration Today. As we close today's conversation, we're focusing on hope, empowerment, the role that community plays when this journey does feel isolating and traumatic. And we left off with Jose beginning to describe his new organization, AngelsIn.Earth, about helping those with trauma and sometimes trauma on trauma. So Jose, I'd love to know more about what the not-for-profit is doing, why it's important to you, how people can access it. Please tell us all about it.
Okay, let me start with how the idea come, because this is something that when I tell this story that people blow their mind, you know. When I was like in my third year of captivity, in that moment, we were really very connected to God. We were heavily praying and having deeply Bible studies. We really, really went very deep, making Bible studies and praying. And it took like 3 hours per day, 3 hours every day we dedicated to that. And you know, when we came to the night, we were like in total peace. So we went to sleep in very, very a peaceful night. I remember one night, if you go back to the trailer that said Vision of Captivity, there is a trailer where I tell the story, because look what happened. I was in the middle of the night and I had a dream. In the middle of the night, I had a dream that God came to me and it took me to the future. And when I went to the future, I went to a place and I saw some classroom, people in classroom. I saw some people doing kind of seminars. I saw a TV studio where I was recording things. And I saw part of my family working there. And I asked him, what is this? And he told me, this is going to be your foundation. It's going to be called Angels Helping in Earth, because I'm an angel. And when I woke up, I was like, why I had this dream? So I really thought that it was a dream, but it was so vivid that by that time I was writing letters with my wife. So I decided to take a paper and begin to write down what I had dreamed. And I write down like an org chart how he told me that the organization was gonna. And I sent that paper to my wife. I came back 2 years after. Mm. 2 years after, when I was going back to the letters to write my book, I found that letter, and my wife told me that when she saw that letter, she saw that I was crazy, because she said, "Why this guy having this type of thinking?" A foundation, right. Seriously. So, you know, I kept that idea, and that idea kept popping to me. But the things that way begin to unfold, everything begin to drive to that. And to the point that when today I'm hosting Now Media, so that's the TV studio that I saw there. And I begin to get connected to my therapist, and she begin to talk about how she wanted to help people to trauma recovery. So the thing begin to unfold by their own. So I said, okay, this is a calling that God's pulling me, but I didn't have no clue how to create a foundation. So I began to investigate about how to create an NGO. And I saw a guy that was doing training in Facebook. He created a webinar. He's a pastor. His name is Willie Peters. And I saw that Pastor Willie was doing a webinar about a creation of foundation and fundraising, etc. And I remember that I came to him and I texted him and said, Pastor, I want to have a conversation. So we have a Zoom. And I said, Pastor, this is my idea. I had this dream, blah, 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 blah. I want you to help me in this. And he told me, why me? And I said, because God told me there has to be you. And then he said, oh, if God said it, I had to.
Very motivating.
I had to do it. And he began to help me. And he helped me to create. So Now, today you see that webpage, and so that the foundation has four pillars. The first pillar, as I mentioned, has to do with trauma recovery. It's the main pillar, the main pillar. There is a second pillar that is legal advice, not only for immigration, that there can be people that cannot pay a lawyer. So you're gonna have some pro bono lawyers helping in that area. Mm-hmm. But also if you want to, for example, have a startup. There is also logistical support. We're gonna do trainings, financial literacy, leadership, citizenship. Because let me tell you something, one of the biggest issues in the Hispanic community, that the people stay here years, mm-hmm. and they don't embrace the culture. They don't speak the language. They don't know the culture. I live in Houston, and you go here in some areas in Houston, they're literally like, you're living like being in Mexico. I'm not saying that you don't have to keep your culture, but you need to embrace the culture of the country where you are.
But we need the leadership, right? We need the citizenry to vote. To change correct, the leadership.
Correct. And that's part of what I want to do. English as a second language. So this type of thing that can help the Hispanic community to integrate more to this society. And there is the fourth pillar, that is the food drive. I'm not expert in the food drive, but I have friends here that are very heavy in that area, and I'm gonna begin to collaboration with them. For example, we did in December a toy donation here in my house. So through our church, we got a big donation of toys, and we did a toy donation for Christmas for people in need. So, you know, I'm today, this for me, this foundation for me is what I say is gonna be the legacy of my life. I see that is the legacy I want to leave for the future, to my family, to
I'm curious, when I have asylum cases and I have VAWA cases or U visa cases, very often we bear the burden of proof, any application that we have that we're submitting to the US government or presenting to an immigration judge. And very often I need therapy letters, therapy records. I need that expert to weigh in with the situation to prove our case. And culturally, I find it very difficult to convince a lot of my clients that therapy is a beneficial component to dealing with life's trauma, because they're just worried about eating and getting to work and getting their kid to school. And do you have any advice for that piece on getting yourself to therapy?
Let me tell you, Daisy, her name is Daisy Rosen. She's from Colombia, but she's married with an American person. She lives in Austin, and she's incredible. I have been working with her since I came back. I have a therapy session with her every week. And she helped me a lot with my PTSD, but she's really, really a trauma recovery expert. And so this is one of the biggest assets of the foundation, because she's trying to create a group of Hispanic therapists, mm-hmm. to take care to Hispanic, because it's not the same when you go to a therapist that is not Hispanic. Because one of the biggest taboo in the Hispanic community is talking about their mental issues. Mm-hmm. The people don't talk about it. But if you have somebody that is from your same culture, like she is from Colombia, maybe you are more open to talk with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. In my region, unfortunately, we have only one or two Spanish-speaking therapists, which is difficult when about 30% of our local community speaks Spanish. And the other English therapists are using translators. Well, that can miss a whole part of the human connection that's necessary, mm-hmm. for really effective therapy. Yeah. So I'm really excited to hear what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. This is beginning. I started in December, so this is a beginning. Anybody that's hearing this, if you want to do any collaboration, any donation, that in the webpage, there's several spaces where you can put donation or collaboration, because I truly believe in the spirit of the collaboration. For example, this friend of mine that has the Hope Center, where he takes care of food drives, I'm partnering right now with him to do a food drive campaign, these type of things.
I think this has been incredibly valuable to me, and I really appreciate your time, Jose. Where can people reach out to learn more about you, this organization, or any other part of this conversation that we've had?
Well, the foundation, as I said, the webpage is angelsin.earth. That is the foundation. But if you want to contact me, my webpage is joseconnect.com. Because in my webpage, you can find I do speaking. I go to attend conference or events or do speaking in company, whatever you want to have me. I also have the book. And my two books, I promoted through my webpage, or you can redirect to Amazon. I also have my coaching program that I mentioned to you that I do basically one-on-one here. I have my TV show, if somebody wants to be a guest in my TV show. And I also have my podcast. If you want to be, my podcast, I do it in English. The TV show, I do it in Spanish.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jose, so much. Your insight just about these various topics, about fear, uncertainty, myths, but also the clarity, resilience, and more than that, just faith and hope, I think have been really helpful for everybody today. To our viewers, remember that knowledge is power, and can't utilize your rights if you don't know your rights, and you do not have to walk this journey alone. This is Immigration Today, where clarity meets compassion, and I'm Elizabeth Trifonis. I thank you very much for the privilege of your time and for watching.